Chapter 26. The commander's voice hissed with interference as he spoke, through the comm, from his armored communications center in the old mine headquarters. "They've brought down our shields. We're evacuating into the bunkers." "Thanks for letting us know," Jaina said. She shivered from cold as she signed to Lobaka to seal the blast doors. "We're setting the mines," the commander said. "We're going to nail a lot of them as they come in."
"Good luck," Jaina said.
But hydraulics began hissing, and the doors boomed shut, and she doubted the signal ever reached the commander in his communications center just below the surface of the moonlet. Jaina turned off the comm and looked at her group of pilots.
"Put on your vac suits, and our body armor over the vac suits."
At that moment, the artificial gravity switched off, and so did the lights. "How many Yuuzhan Vong warriors to capture a moon?" Savong La wondered. He had 20,000 in the troop ships under his command, but surely that was excessive. 10,000, then. The rest could escape to fight another day. Nor did he need the entirety of the battle group of Yun Yuuzhan. 1/3 should be sufficient to repel the New Republic forces long enough to assure the success of his sacrifice. "Come, Jidai," he shouted to the Ogzil. "Come to the hunt. Where is your courage?" Then, turning to the subalterns around the cognition throne, he told them to order the other battle groups to withdraw from the fight. He ordered 2 of the 3 divisions of his own squadron to flee as well, and half the troop ships. "But not those containing Gretchina," he called. "These we shall need once we land on the moon." The rock-eating Gretchina would be a surprise, he thought. The Jedi would be forced to move through the tunnels that already existed, but the Gretchina could dig their own. But before the Gretchina landed, the soldiers would have to secure the area. He ordered the first transports to the surface, covered by the fire of the ships above. "Warmaster," came the call from one of his subalterns, "a report from the battle group of Yun Harla. They succeeded in withdrawing into hyperspace, but their jump has failed. They report mines." Mines. The battle group of Yun Harla and the battle group of Yun Sheen leapt into hyperspace together, racing to safety down the narrow corridor that snaked through the deep core. But both were yanked out of hyperspace by the interdictor mine that had been set up in the lane's choke point, and all then found themselves in the middle of an enormous minefield that had been laid clean across the narrow corridor. Every second the enemy remained in the minefield, thousands of mines detected the intruders, swung toward their new targets, and fired themselves at the Yuuzhan Vong. Many of the Yuuzhan Vong ships were damaged and unable to defend themselves properly. Overwhelmed by the mines, many of these were destroyed in a blizzard of explosions. The few with undamaged defenses fared better, though few escaped without any damage at all. The battle group of Yun Ka, which had been engaged by the fleet of Garm Bel Iblis and the Small Smugglers Alliance squadron, managed a clean jump into hyperspace and arrived in the minefield more or less together. Fewer of their ships had suffered critical damage, and most were able to fight their way out. The 2/3 of Savong La's battle group of Yun Yuuzhan were warned of the minefield's existence before they jumped, prepared themselves beforehand, and fared best of all. But the lightly armed troop transports were unable to defend themselves effectively, and within a few minutes in the minefields, 10,000 Yuuzhan Vong warriors met their deaths. As for the battle group of Yun Yamka, it was too far into Ebak's gravity field to jump, pinned by overwhelming New Republic forces and wiped out. More than 1/3 of the Yuuzhan Vong fleet had been destroyed, and that did not count the remainder of Savong La's battle group gathered about Ebak 9 to defend their commander and his ground forces. There, the first Yuuzhan Vong warriors to charge into the New Republic command centers were met by automatic mines that shredded them through their Vondun crab armor. The warriors charged over their own dead and encountered even more mines. "You're already dead," Savong La told them by Vilip. "The only question is whether you will die honorably as Yuuzhan Vong, or as a cowardly disgrace to the gods who made you." None of the warriors were cowards. More than 1,000 gave their lives to the mines, and the rest trampled their dead brethren and found only an abandoned facility. There,
They erect enough of the equipment to finish off the power supply and drop all of Ebak's shields.
"Bring blood sacrifice to the surface," Sabong La commanded. "We will release the Gretchina and the Voxen."
The huge flagship was brought to the moon's surface. Before Sabong La left for the moon, he seized the Ogzil again and shouted again in Basic,
"Are you not coming, Jedi? Won't you join the hunt? Where is your courage?"
To his surprise, the answering voice was one he recognized. "This is Jason Solo," the Villip reported. "I'll play your game, War Master." Sabong La's answer was filled with grim satisfaction.
"Welcome, traitor. I shall look forward to seeing you again.
And I, you, War Master?"
Menace rang in the War Master's words. "Once I swore to sacrifice you, Jason Solo. Perhaps we shall have the sacrifice after all."
"Perhaps I'll manage to delay it again," Jason said. "Will you let me land, War Master?"
"Any Jedi may land. I will so instruct the fleet."
"That's very courteous of you, War Master."
"Not at all. Would you come to Ebak if I ordered the fleet to blast you out of existence the second you arrived?"
Jason would, but there was no point in telling the War Master that. "I'll see you soon, War Master," Jason said, and keyed off. His astromech droid bleated at him to let him know he had another incoming call. Jason switched frequencies.
"Jason," Luke said, "what are you doing?"
"Helping my sister."
Jason couldn't quite keep defiance out of his voice. Jason felt a surge of Luke's presence through the Jedi meld, a forceful effort by Luke to contact him emotionally as well as by words.
"You can't help her by sacrificing yourself," Luke said.
"I'm not planning on getting sacrificed. Jaina and the others are in a hardened bunker. All she has to do is wait there until the fleet comes to get her. And we are coming, all of us. Creefe, Farlander, Bel Iblis, and your parents."
Jason felt the force meld urging him to listen to Luke, to surrender to his reasonable argument. He fought the compulsion and tried to sound as calm and reasonable as he could.
"I don't trust Sabong La to do what people expect him to," he said. "I felt your surprise when he moved on Ebak 9.
Luke didn't have an answer for that.
"I have a plan," Jason continued. "I'm not going to run right into his arms. I'm going to distract him and keep him off Jaina's neck."
A stab of fear ran through the Jedi meld, and the taste of it was Jaina's.
"Jaina's being hunted," Jason said. "I've got to go now."
He snapped off the comm. Luke and others continued to try to contact him through the meld, but Jason withdrew, and tried instead to concentrate on his Vong sense. He was out of practice. There had been no Yuuzhan Vong to practice on. But as he slowed his respiration and entered a meditative state, he felt the enemy out ahead of him. Grim, determined flecks of consciousness, all ready to sacrifice themselves for their leaders. Yuuzhan Vong bravery and determination weren't surprising. What did surprise him was the numbers. On Ebak alone, there must have been thousands.
Jaina waited in the dark. The Jedi were perfectly at home in the dark, strengthened by the Force and able to sense the walls around them, but she felt anxiety grow in her non-Jedi companions, so she had them all switch on helmet lights and belt lights. Through the Jedi meld, she felt the growing certainty of victory, and then the growing triumph as one Yuuzhan Vong squadron after another fled the battle. She sensed that Jason was doing something completely out of the box, but she didn't know what, and she sensed the others trying to do something about it. Distress trickled into her at this knowledge, but she didn't have a comm unit that could reach Jason, and she couldn't talk to him. She had made up her mind to try to reach him through the meld when something else drew her attention. Or perhaps something not else. Through the enhanced perceptions of the Force meld, she felt an emptiness, a void, something that was not in the Force. The Yuuzhan Vong. And then she felt a surge through the force, a purposeful sensation as malevolent and certain as the sound of a blaster being cocked next to her ear.
Voxen. Voxen hunting her.
Lobaka snarled. "Remind me to tell the High Command how much I hate their battle plan," Jaina said. There were hundreds of mine shafts in the old diggings, and a dozen or so that had been shielded by blast doors to delay the enemy. Some had been booby-trapped to make the Vong cautious. The battle plan assumed that the odds of the Yuuzhan Vong finding her particular blast doors and committing their forces to breaking through were very low. The battle plan hadn't assumed the presence of Voxen that could sense any force user and lead the enemy straight to Jaina, whether she was anonymous behind the blast doors or not.
"Too bad we don't have any of those YVH droids," one of her pilots said.
"There aren't enough of them," Jaina said. "The ones they've got are guarding the government." She considered.
"Stand well away from the doors," Jaina decided. "I don't know what they're going to use to bring them down, but I know I don't want to be anywhere near the blast."
"Perhaps it is time to deploy the mines,"
Tisar said. His vac-suited tail lashed left and right.
"Yes, but away from the entrance. I don't want our mines wrecked by whatever they use to knock the door down."
And then, on cue, they felt as well as heard a crash. The floor trembled, and the still air of the shaft reverberated to the sudden thunder that came from the other side of the blast door. The eight pilots of Twin Sun's squadron fell back down the tunnel without a word. They busied themselves in the dark, setting up anti-personnel mines, while the crash repeated itself again and again. It was through the force as much as by eyesight that Jaina sensed part of the wall cracking, parts of it flaking off and coming down.
"They're not coming through the door," she said. "They're coming around it."
Something else the plan had not foreseen. The Yuuzhan Vong filled the long tunnel that ran the length of the moon. 1,000 in the advance guard, followed by baying Voxen and a pair of massive Gruchina, surprisingly light and agile in the low gravity. Then came the main body, with Sabong Lai and half the communications staff from the Blood Sacrifice. Explosions ripped the air ahead, and 20 of the advance guard went down in their own blood, another trap laid by the cowardly infidels, who would not fight hand-to-hand, but instead with these machine snares. The rest marched over them, past one set of durasteel blast doors after another. The Yuuzhan Vong would not halt until the Voxen did. The Voxen, their sensory bristles erect, stopped before a blast door indistinguishable from the others. One of them was so close to death that it could barely drag itself along, even in the low gravity. They tasted the door with their forked tongues, and then their howling filled the huge tunnel and sang like a melody in Sabong La's nerves.
"Voxen back," Sabong La told the trainers. "Bring the Gruchina forward."
The Gruchina were sleek, black, armor-plated beasts, 6 meters long, much larger cousins of the metal-eating Gruchins that Yuuzhan Vong fighter craft used as weapons. The Gruchina lacked the Gruchins' flight capability, but also their mindlessness. These were trainable and semi-intelligent, and Sabong La had brought them on this expedition knowing he might have to dig the infidels out of their hiding places. The huge beasts snarled forward, steel-sharp mandibles deployed. Sabong La looked for a moment at the blast doors, then shouted at the trainers.
"Have them dig through the tunnel walls. The walls are softer, and the doors may be mined."
The tunnel shivered as the Gruchina hurled themselves at the rock walls. Sabong La, thinking of mines, prudently retreated into the main body. He had no fear of death, and in any case, he knew he would die today. But dying foolishly as the victim of a mine would be to trivialize his own end.
"Blood Sacrifice reports that Jason Solo has landed," one of his subalterns reported.
"Very good," Sabong La said. "Did Blood Sacrifice say where?"
The subaltern communed with his villip for a moment.
"Not at the main entrance. Somewhere on the far side."
Sabong La drew his slashed lips into a smile.
"We shall find him soon enough."
He turned to the Voxen handlers. 2 Voxen to join the advance guard, he ordered. All of them to find Jason Solo.
At your command, War Master.
Capture him for sacrifice if possible. But if not, call the gods to witness and kill him where he stands.
Savungla had to shout over the noise the Gretchener made disassembling the tunnel wall. 2 of the Voxen snorted onto the head of the advance guard, and the whole body of 1,000 set off at a purposeful trot. Jason Solo. At the thought of Jason, the War Master's Vuasa foot clenched, the claws scoring the stone floor. Jason had thwarted him at their every encounter, had smashed his foot in personal combat, requiring its replacement, and when captured, had humiliated him with his sham defection. Now Jason dared to thwart him again. It was only now that he wondered why. Why would Jason Solo fly alone to Ebak 9 so that he could be hunted by Savungla and 10,000 Yuuzhan Vong warriors? At once the answer came to him. The twin sister. Jaina Solo, she who mocked Yun Harla, the trickster, with her devious ploys, must be among the Jedi trapped on Ebak 9. Joy raged in Savungla's breast. The twin sacrifice. Once he had planned to sacrifice the Solo twins, an ambition that had been thwarted by the treasons of Jason and Verger. But now, the sacrifice would come to pass. And once the two were dead, Savungla himself could go to his gods with a smile on his slashed lips. The tunnel wall crashed in as the Gretchener broke through to the mineshaft beyond.
"Onward, soldiers!" Savungla cried. "The Jedi are to be sacrificed. Forward!"
Jaina heard the tunnel wall come down, and then she heard the massed baying of Yuuzhan Vong warriors from the corridor beyond. It sounded like thousands of them.
"Back," she said. "Fall back to the next intersection."
They left anti-personnel mines behind, set to go off when they detected the body heat of the enemy. The mine galleries branched here, and Jaina consulted the map of the diggings she'd stored on her datapad, and chose the branch that gave her the most options. They moved down the tunnel, and the Jedi used the Force to keep everyone from bumping into each other in the low gravity. Then came a shriek, a screech with an ultrasonic component that froze Jaina's blood and raised the hairs on the back of her neck.
"What was that?" one of her pilots demanded.
"Voxen," Tisar said. "They hunt us."
"We can kill them, right?" anxiously.
She heard one mine go off, followed by a shriek and a roar of anger from 100 warrior throats.
"I hope we just did," Jaina said.
Jason sped down the corridor, flying easily with the Force in the moonlit's light gravity, his flashlight picking out the details of the tunnels ahead of him. He, too, had a map of Ebak 9 on his datapad, and he figured the Yuuzhan Vong were in occupation of the command areas and the central corridor. He planned to materialize in the central corridor, strike the Yuuzhan Vong, then retreat. He would do his best to sow confusion and lead the enemy away from Jaina. At least he could lead the Voxen on a chase, and with any luck, trap them in the narrow passages and kill them. His expanded Vong sense filled the room. The sheer number of enemy warriors was intimidating, but he still hoped that, with luck, his plan would succeed. Unfortunately, his equipment was sparse. He had just his lightsaber, plus the blaster pistol, and the 2 grenades that were in the X-Wing's survival kit. But he could fight with Yuuzhan Vong weapons if he needed to, and if he got the jump on some enemy warriors, he could equip himself with their gear. And then he felt the mental surge of a Voxen looking for him, and he pushed out with his Vong sense, tried to convince the Voxen not to see him. But he wasn't expert enough. There was a mental click of the Voxen locking onto him, and he heard a distant howl that echoed down the shaft, followed by a surge of glee and determination from hundreds of Yuuzhan Vong warriors, and he knew he was being hunted. He reversed direction. There was no possibility now of catching the Yuuzhan Vong by surprise. It was time to find one of those narrow corridors he'd been thinking about. Jason found a right-angle bend in the corridor and decided to make a stand while he still had options for retreat. He stationed himself behind a curve in the tunnel and ignited his lightsaber, then primed one of his two grenades and held it in his left hand. Objectively, he considered the use of the Vong sense in combat. He could influence some of the enemy weapons, render them useless, but decided against it. There were simply too many enemy coming for him. He could convince a few of their amphistaffs to bite their owners or go limp. He could convince a few thudbugs to go off prematurely, but he couldn't influence them all. The Force was better for this situation. He let his Vong sense ebb and called the Force to him. He heard the enemy rush toward him, shouts and the rush of feet. A horde packed into the corridor, skimming along under the light gravity. The ultrasonic screech of the Voxen caught Jason by surprise and almost paralyzed him. He had forgotten how numbing and terrifying the sound was. He wrenched himself free of the shock and hurled the grenade around the corner, exposing his head just enough to use the Force to guide the grenade down the open mouth of the Voxen. The Voxen, in its turn, was spitting toxic sludge at Jason, but Jason used the Force to catch the acid stuff and fling it back in the direction of the enemy warriors. What shocked him was the number of those same warriors. It was one thing to sense them coming. It was another to actually see them, and at close range. They seemed to go on forever down the tunnel. There were hundreds. He ducked back around the corner as the grenade took off most of the Voxen's head. Jason knew that even this was unlikely to kill the creature, so he drew his blaster pistol with his left hand and began firing around the corner again, at the Voxen, and at any enemy warriors behind it. The Voxen, blinded or mad with pain, thrashed in the corridor with amazing energy and incredible speed. Its flogging tail had already brought down a number of warriors, but as Jason began firing, again exposing only his hand and head, the Yuuzhan Vong gave a shout and surged forward, right over the thrashing Voxen, some even shoving the creature ahead of them as they impaled themselves on its poisoned spikes. From the warrior's hands came a rain of thudbugs. Jason leapt back from the corner, parrying wildly with his lightsaber as the thudbugs soared toward him, either making the sharp turn or bouncing off a wall, and then coming on. One bug hit him on the thigh and spun him around, and he used the Force to maintain the spin, his lightsaber a green blur as he batted the missiles away. He made a complete turn and then used the Force to hurl himself backward down the tunnel while he parried with his lightsaber and fired the pistol left-handed to discourage the Vong from rounding the corner. He didn't discourage them. The first half-dozen went down in a sprawl alongside the wounded Voxen, but then the rest came on, a long column of them, shouting their battle cry, "Duroic Vong Prat!" From behind them somewhere came the cry of another Voxen. Jason fired round after round from the blaster, though he knew it would do no good, and somewhere in the Force he felt Jaina's anguish. "Bring the roof down," Jaina said. "Right here." "How?" one of her pilots asked. "We've got mines, not explosives." Jaina reached out with the Force and sought out cracks and flaws in the structure of the stone overhead. Tisar and Lobaka joined their power to hers. "Stand back," Jaina said. A half-ton overhead boulder came down with a sudden crash, followed by debris and rubble. She widened the hole overhead, gouging at the rock, bringing more of it down. Then a shriek seemed to steal the breath from her throat, and a Voxen was there, somehow managing to ride through the storm of falling rock and leap into the midst of Jaina's party. She had forgotten how fast they were. She managed to get a Force shield up in time to deflect a hail of toxic spit and leapt over the first lash of the tail while she drew her lightsaber and ignited the violet blade. There was a thud and a cry behind her. Blasters flamed in the dark, confined space, and concussions slapped her ears. Lobaka was slashing at the thing's head, the brilliance of his lightsaber reflecting off the Voxen's glittering eyes. The tunnel reeked of the Voxen's acid spit. The tail lashed a second time and Jaina leapt again, then came down slashing at the tail. The tail parted near its root, and acrid blood spattered Jaina's vac suit. And then the three Jedi were fighting side by side, lightsabers swinging in a frenzy of close combat against teeth and claws and poison and sheer single-minded viciousness. Whenever one of the other pilots could get a clear shot, he let fly with a blaster. Blood and acid spattered and hissed on the tunnel walls. The Voxen didn't stop fighting until it was literally cut to pieces, and the fight left Jaina exhausted, gasping for breath and leaning against the wall of the shaft. She had taken only a few breaths when she heard the howl of Vong warriors and looked up to see them filling the tunnel just beyond her rock barrier. A barrage of thud bugs came over the obstruction, followed by a mob of warriors scrabbling over the fallen stone. Jaina fired her blaster rifle left-handed at point-blank range while using her lightsaber to slice the thud bugs that came at her.
"The roof," she gasped. "Let's get the roof down."
She and Tisar and Lobaka united their force talents once more and clawed at the roof, bringing down rubble and stones at first, then boulders. Blaster bolts ricocheted among the rocks, reflecting in all directions. Jaina parried one with her violet blade. And then the roof was down with the sound of thunder, a billowing cloud wall of dust rolling down the mine shaft toward Jaina. She had seen at least half a dozen Yuuzhan Vong warriors buried. "That won't hold them long," one of her pilots said. "Those rocks won't weigh much in this gravity. And look how they got around the blast doors." "Maybe it'll hold them long enough for me to get another idea," Jaina thought.
"Pull back," she gasped.
She wiped dust and sweat from her face and felt a faint surprise that she had any sweat left. It was only then that she found she had casualties. Her stomach queased as she saw Twin Four sprawled against the wall where the Voxen's tail had thrown him, his vac suit punctured by a score of poison spines. Twin Seven had been hit in the chest by a thud bug and knocked sprawling. He claimed he'd just had the wind knocked out of him, but Jaina didn't like the way his face shivered with pain when the others stood him on his feet. Two carried Twin Four's body to the rear, and another two supported Twin Seven. The Jedi stayed behind his rear guard until they reached a three-way intersection. The pilots ahead halted, and one of them looked over his shoulder. "Which way, Major?" Jaina pulled her data pad from the pocket of her sleeve and looked at it. The map seemed to swirl before her eyes. She was too tired to think properly, she realized. She forced her mind to work on the problem.
"You go left," she said. "Streak and Tisar and I are going straight ahead."
"Wait a minute." Twin Ten, with Twin Seven's arm around his shoulders, was indignant. "What do you mean by splitting us up?"
"The Vong are hunting Jedi," Jaina said. "You'll be safe if you take a detour, and we'll be safer if we don't have to worry about protecting you."
"And you won't die with us," she thought.
"We can fight, Major," Twin Ten insisted. "We can help you." "I appreciate it, but we haven't come this far with you, just to let you go off and fight the Vong on your own. You made us a team, and we're sticking together."
Jaina fought back the tears that suddenly stung her eyes. This was the fighting spirit that she had created, created with the drills and painstaking labor and blood. But all this admirable resolution could do right now was get the others killed unnecessarily. She straightened and took a breath and looked at Twin Ten.
"Do I have to make this in order, Lieutenant?" she asked.
Anger and frustration twitched across Twin Ten's face. Then he shook his head.
"I guess not, Major," he said. "Then get moving. I'll see you when this is over."
Jaina watched for a moment as her weary pilots limped away, then dragged herself down the tunnel she'd chosen. Her mind swam with weariness.
"Gather strength from the Force," Tisar said.
It was more an order than a suggestion. Jaina was too tired to agree verbally. She just expanded her Force awareness and let its power drain into her. There was a limit as to how long she could keep this up. Ultimately, there was no substitute for nutrition and bed rest. But as the Force swam through her body, flushing every cell with energy, she found herself standing straighter. Her step was more firm, her breathing less labored. She consulted the map in her data pad and made a decision.
"We turn here."
Tisar and Loey looked at the blank tunnel walls in surprise. Loey growled a question. In answer, Jaina pointed above their heads. An air shaft went up, connecting the tunnel to another gallery above their heads. The other two used the force to help Jaina rise into the shaft, and then by bracing her arms and feet against the rough sides of the shaft, she was able to chimney up 6 or 7 meters to the gallery above, where she turned and aided the others. The maneuver was made very easy by the light gravity. Even Nobaka didn't weigh any more than 15 kilos. Tisar turned on his belt light and looked each way down the corridor. Frost glittered on the rough stone walls.
"Where now?" he asked.
"We wait right here. We can hold this shaft forever, or at least until they find another way into this gallery. And then when they come, we run the other way."
Tisar seemed to find this plan acceptable and switched off his belt light. The three stood in the frigid tunnel and waited, knowing they wouldn't wait long. Jaina closed her eyes and opened herself to the Jedi meld. "Uncle Luke," she sent, "where are you?" Luke was wondering how to retake the moon when the New Republic didn't have any troops on hand. They hadn't anticipated ground combat, so the only forces available were the lightly armed military police on the large capital ships. These and the Jedi, whom War Master Sabong La hoped would land on the little moonlet, whom he had invited to land. The New Republic forces were on the verge of engaging the small squadron the Yuuzhan Vong had left behind to guard their ground forces. The Yuuzhan Vong would fight bravely, but wouldn't last long against the New Republic's numbers. Luke wondered how long it had been since the odds were on his side. It was then that he felt the query from Jaina. The reply he sent was nonverbal, just a basic mental impression that meant, "Where are you?" Jaina's response was equally nonverbal, pictures as well as anything else. Tunnel, Voxen, troops. How many troops? Picturing numerals and enemy warriors. Lots, coming soon. With mental pictures of Vong packed shoulder to shoulder in the narrow mine shafts. Luke verbalized his next sending. "Can you get to the surface from where you are?" "Negative." He clenched his teeth. His next message was complicated, and it took him a moment to arrange his thoughts. Would it be possible to get a starfighter down Ebak's central shaft? In Jaina's reply, Luke sensed the weary amusement at the sheer audacity of the idea, flying an X-wing down the shaft and blasting hosts of Yuuzhan Vong from their perches. In response was a picture of the shaft, which showed it wide enough. But then Jaina sent another picture of the shaft head, with its heavy ore-hoisting equipment that would have to be gotten out of the way. Still, it was the best plan Luke had come up with. "We're coming for you," he sent. "Just wait." Again Luke sensed amusement, tinged this time with bitterness, as if Jaina had said, "Like I have a choice." Through the meld, Luke told the other Jedi to prepare for a landing on Ebak 9, and a fight against overwhelming numbers. The first Voxen that Sabong La sent up the vertical shaft came down in pieces, and was followed by a grenade. A dozen brave warriors who tried to chimney up the shaft were killed by blaster fire before they got more than a few meters, and another grenade dropped down and killed a dozen more. This would delay things only a little.
"Send for the Gretchina," the War Master ordered.
He wouldn't send any more brave warriors up that shaft. Instead, he'd dig away the floor from beneath the infidel's feet. "Blood sacrifice reports they have engaged the enemy," one of his subalterns reported. "They will delay the infidel's arrival as long as possible.
Tell the fleet that the gods will salute their courage."
He turned to another subaltern.
"How is the search for Jason Solo?"
"No change, War Master. He flees, but our forces are keeping him in sight. He... War Master," the subaltern with the auxil interrupted, "a communication for you."
Sabong La took the auxil from the subaltern.
"Who wishes to speak to me?"
he demanded.
"Can you not guess, War Master?"
At the sound of the voice, Sabong La's heart began to rage within his chest.
"For Jair," he said in surprise, and then he forced amusement into his voice. "Have you called to beg for the lives of the Solo twins?"
"No. I have come to join your Jedi hunt, if you'll let me."
The War Master laughed. "You're a miserable traitor,
and very clever. But you are not a Jedi.
But I am a Jedi. A real Jedi. Not one of these imitations you've been fighting. Haven't you worked that out by now?
Smug pleasure oozed from Vergier's words.
I lived alongside you for 50 years without detection, and then I betrayed you. I'm surprised the Supreme Overlord allowed you to live after I made you look so ridiculous.
Fury gripped Savonla by the throat.
Come to Ebak 9, he shouted. Come to the sacrifice of the Solo Twins.
If you'll let me.
I'll instruct the ships to let you by.
He threw the Ogzil back to his subordinate.
See to it.
Immediately, War Master.
The packed warriors surged aside as the first of the two Gretchena arrived, half-floating in the low gravity.
He said to one of the trainers, and pointed at the roof. Begin there.
Then he turned to the nearest group of Yuuzhan Vong.
Up the shaft, warriors, he shouted. Keep the Jedi busy while we dig.
The three Jedi stood in the dark, illuminated only by their lightsabers. Jaina had just begun to think that the Yuuzhan Vong had been too inactive for too long, when the floor reverberated to an impact, and from below there was a crash of falling rock.
Vong, Tisar said,
and leaned out to fire into the shaft as warriors began to scramble up. Razorbugs shot up in a useless attempt at providing a covering attack, and Lobaka and Jaina sliced them effortlessly with their lightsabers. The floor rocked to another shattering blow. Jaina could hear rock cracking. Drop a grenade, she thought, and run. Run until they caught her, and then fight until she couldn't fight any longer. Jason had decided he might as well make his stand. The mine shafts branched and narrowed, and when the roof got less than 2 meters high, he realized he was out of choices. When the tunnels were so small he could only crouch, then the Voxen would have too great an advantage. He made a turn into a branching tunnel and readied his lightsaber and blaster. He'd save his last grenade for the next Voxen. The enemy warriors hurled themselves down the tunnel, and Jason fired on them. Thudbugs and Blorash jelly flew at him. He ducked some and cut at others. He was strangely calm. This wasn't the first time he had made a mistake, and dying was nothing new either. It was the thought of Jaina that brought despair. He had failed to help her, and through the Force and their twin bond, he felt her own hopelessness. The Yuuzhan Vong kept coming, dozens of them lunging, charging, hurling thudbugs, spitting poison from the heads of their amphistaffs. Jason's blaster was running out of charges. His lightsaber was a brilliant green blur as it parried and slashed. Pace by pace he stepped back into the narrowing shaft. Jason felt rage building in him, a red fury that was his response to his own despair. The blaster hummed empty, and he threw it at the warrior. And then he remembered the power he could call upon, the power fueled by the kind of despair and anger he felt now and had felt before, and he hurled it at the warrior, the brilliant emerald fire that lanced from his fingertips. The Force lightning threw the first rank of Yuuzhan Vong back into their comrades, and in the confusion Jason launched another blaze of fire. He hadn't killed them. The murderous form of lightning was a dark side weapon. But they wouldn't be waking for a long time. Young Jedi. Jason looked around and somehow wasn't surprised to find Vergier standing there. Hello, he said, and fired another sizzling blast at the Yuuzhan Vong. Vergier looked up at him, her tilted eyes glittering and wise.
You're about to lose your heir, she said.
Vergier! The subaltern cried, his voice ringing high above the sound of the Gretchena bringing down stone. Savong La swung at the subaltern.
Whatever.
Impatiently, isn't she coming?
She comes. But she isn't slowing down.
The A-wing that Vergier stole from Ral Roost's fighter bays impacted Ebak 9's main shaft head, traveling at 35,000 kilometers per hour. The starfighter's weapons had been scavenged for use elsewhere, but weapons were scarcely necessary.
The impact vaporized the heavy girders and machinery at the shaft head, and the starfighter's power plant and the two huge Novaldex engines turned into a fast-moving ball of plasma that swept the length of EBAC-9's central shaft and blew out the other side, a brilliant volcanic eruption that blinded any holocams that happened to be turned in that direction. As the superheated ion storm rampaged through the moonlet, it flashed into any open side corridors, and, to a lesser degree, any corridors branching off these. But Jaina and Jason were too deep into the galleries to be directly affected. What happened in their galleries was an enormous, eardrum-punishing buffet of pressure and heat, followed by a furious dust and windstorm that lasted mere seconds, after which the air was simply gone. The hurtling ball of plasma pushed a huge pressure wave ahead of it, and carried an underpressure behind, drawing air out of all the galleries. In addition, the storm of heat and pressure had set the moon on fire. Even metal will burn if it's hot enough and there's enough oxygen to keep the fires going. The fires set by the A-Wing's ion fury were hot enough and powerful enough to suck every bit of oxygen out of the tunnels within seconds. The Yuuzhan Vong had come prepared for decompression. It was an obvious defense strategy after all. All of them carried Ooglith cloakers that would enable them to survive without air. But they had expected more warning. Even if the New Republic engineers had blown the shaft head and exposed it to the vacuum of space, it would have taken many minutes for all the great volume of air to evacuate the tunnels, and the warriors would have had all that time from the first decompression warning to safely don their cloakers. Those who survived the great wave of heat and radiation experienced at first the brutal overpressure of the impact, followed by a dusty, disorienting, hurricane-like wind as the air was sucked behind the racing plasma ball and into the fires of the central core. The oxygen was gone within 2 or 3 seconds of the impact. The few Yuuzhan Vong who realized what had just happened were caught in a pack of their cohorts, disoriented and unable to communicate in the sudden absence of air. Many experienced syncope and passed out at once. Any who tried to hold their breath died of embolism as their lungs frothed and exploded. In order to survive, any individual warrior would have had to claw his cloaker free and don it amid a scrambling, staggering, falling crowd of his fellows, many of whom would have tried to snatch the cloaker from him in order to don it themselves. The three surviving Voxens and the Gretchina had no Ooglith cloakers to wear, and they panicked in the absence of air and thrashed madly. Many Yuuzhan Vong were crushed or poisoned, slashed or bitten by the dying animals, including their handlers. Within 20 seconds, all the Yuuzhan Vong had passed out. Within minutes, they were dead. As deaths in battle go, these were comparatively merciful. The first blast of heat and pressure knocked Jaina from the shaft, staggered with vertigo from the double slap to her ears. "Depressurization," she called, her mind whirling. With one quick movement, she slapped her faceplate closed. The air around her howled, a screaming hurricane that threatened to drag her into the shaft, but within 3 seconds this was diminished to nothing. By the time she had fully secured her pressure helmet, the air was gone. About time, she thought. She could have done with engineers blowing the shaft head a lot earlier. Tisar stood closest to the shaft, able to use his tail to brace himself against the shaft walls and avoid being knocked about by the storm. Jaina gestured at him to take a glance down the shaft and see if the enemy were moving. Tisar looked, stepped back, one hand gesturing at Jaina to stay where she was. Jaina understood. Whatever was happening in the lower gallery, it was something she didn't want to watch. Jason watched the Yuuzhan Vong die. He had no helmet, but thanks to Vergere's warning, he was able to preserve the air in his immediate area with the Force, forming a seal across the tunnel opening ahead of him. The Yuuzhan Vong fell in graceful silence one by one, dropping slowly in the light gravity like the petals of some absurdly menacing flower. "I wish I could help them," Jason said. "There is nothing more useless than an impossible wish." Vergere was severe. He turned to her. "You did this, didn't you?" Vergere's whiskers twitched with distaste. "It was necessary that you be liberated from your choices." Jason sighed.
My choices weren't very good, were they?
You chose with your heart, and you achieved your object, did you not? Your sister lives.
She looked at him solemnly, and I achieved my object as well. You are free to pursue your destiny.
Truth struck Jason. He looked at Verger in shock.
I just realized, he said.
You're dead, aren't you? The blood sacrifice blew at the same moment the fireball blossomed from Ebak's far side, and Luke was staggered by the double explosion. He sought the Force Meld, searching for the Jedi trapped on the moon, but it was some time before their presence returned to the Meld. They had been very busy. What happened, he demanded. Depressurization. A picture of wind whirling out of the tunnel, followed by another picture of enemy dead.
Jaina? Tisar?
Sending pictures. Luke received pictures in return. Jaina and Tisar, hale and well, beneath the blue skies of some green planet.
And Jason?
Jaina's excited presence interrupted.
Jason? He's here?
Yes. Jason's presence in the Meld was calm. With Verger. She's saved us.
Verger, thought Luke.
His reaction was strong enough to send his complex feelings into the Force Meld, and he felt the others react. Luke quickly dampened his contact with the Meld. There were secrets he didn't want all Jedi to know.
Was Verger with the Yuuzhan Vong?
The complex idea took some time for Luke to formulate. If the answer to his question was yes, the Yuuzhan Vong knew of the Alpha Red weapon, and this whole victory might be pointless.
No.
Verger's astringent personality flowed into the Meld from wherever she had been concealing herself, and spoke with extraordinary clarity. I have been hiding among the New Republic forces. I stole a fighter and dived it into the moon to destroy the enemy.
Luke absorbed the implications of this.
You gave your life to save the others. Verger's response was the answer she had given all along.
It was necessary.
Luke hesitated. Battle was still raging and people were still dying.
Hold on, he tried to send. We'll get you out as soon as we can.
And to the rest of the Jedi, he sent a strong suggestion not to mention Verger to anyone.
There are reasons.
He shifted his mind to the battle. The Yuuzhan Vong had fought with their usual tremendous courage, but such courage hadn't served them well. It had become a trap, as Akbar had foreseen. Their formation was broken, their ships afire. Their crews dying. The New Republic forces were finishing them off.
Luke looked at Garm Bel-Iblis, saw the man's knife-like profile gazing intently at the battle display.
"Can we call on them to surrender?" he asked. Bel-Iblis was surprised.
"Why? They'll fight on. They always do."
"Because it will make us feel better to know that we offered. That we did all we could to preserve life." Bel-Iblis considered this for a moment as he tugged his long white mustache, then nodded.
"Very well," he said.
The offer to accept the enemy's surrender was made repeatedly from that moment. The Yuuzhan Vong did not answer, and died. Jason stood in the narrow mine gallery so that he wouldn't lose body heat by sitting or leaning on the cold stone. He was practicing tapas, the art of keeping warm in a cold environment, but he was finding it difficult to concentrate on this and on maintaining the force shield that retained his air, and so he was beginning to shiver.
"I got you killed," he said.
Verger tilted her chin.
"Dying was my decision, young Jedi, not yours."
"But," Jason reasoned, "I created the situation that led to your making that decision.
In that case, you may rejoice in the fact that your sister is alive."
Verger shook her head.
"Both of us could not live. The situation would not permit that. The choice was between the young and promising, as against the wise and superannuated. And given that choice," she sighed, "nature always chooses the young."
She sighed again.
I chose to bow to the will of nature. My time ended 40 years ago. Now at last I will join my master and my old comrades.
Tears stung Jason's eyes. I wish it had worked out differently. Again Vergere looked severe. What did I say about impossible wishes?
Jason hugged himself and rubbed his upper arms for warmth. His teeth chattered.
Can you help me stay warm? He asked.
Amusement glittered in Vergere's eyes.
My abilities in this state are necessarily limited. I suggest you call upon your other friends.
Mara felt the tension go out of her as Seen Sov delivered his report from Bel Iblis's flagship.
Master Skywalker reports that all the Jedi trapped on the moon have survived. In fact, no Jedi casualties have been reported at all.
Sov looked as pleased as his heavy-jowled face permitted.
His step was lighter and his button eyes glittered. He turned to Akbar.
"Your plan was brilliant, sir," he said. "It worked perfectly."
Akbar made an agitated movement of his hands.
"I should have foreseen the occupation of Ebak."
His words were slurred, and his skin had turned gray.
"I should have insisted on ground troops defending that moon."
The Supreme Commander wasn't about to let second thoughts spoil his victory.
"It all worked out for the best," Sov said.
He gestured at the hollow representation of Ebak's system.
"Look, sir, no surviving enemy craft. The board's nothing but blue."
Akbar's whiskered chin fell on his chest.
"I should have foreseen it," he mumbled.
Winter looked at Mara.
"We should get Akbar home. Will you help me?"
Mara and Winter each took one of Akbar's arms and helped him rise. As they made their way out of the command center, Idar Nili Kirka ran up to Mara.
"Now we can roll up their spy networks," he said. "The Vong will never believe any of these networks now."
"I've been thinking about that," Mara said. "Maybe we should let one of them stay in place."
Nili Kirka cocked his head. "Really?" he said. "Can you explain your reasoning?"
"If we roll up two of the networks and leave the third alone, that will give the third more credence."
"Hmm. Very intriguing."
Mara and Nili Kirka debated the matter all the way to the shuttle gate. Luke was eager to mount a rescue mission immediately, but the central shaft of EBAC-9 was too hot and too radioactive for living beings to enter. Droids were sent instead, bringing food, water, heaters, bedding, and vacuum-proof tents in which the survivors could live while waiting for the moon to cool down. Cybot load lifters were used, on the theory that their unsophisticated brains would be less subject to being scrambled by radiation. MD-series medical droids were sent in as well. One of them froze partway in, slagged by radiation, but the others got through intact. Jason was found keeping warm with energy sent to him by the Jedi Meld. He set up the tent, ballooned it with air, set up the heater, and consumed several warm drinks. The medical droid pronounced him well. The load lifters found Jaina as well, but were unable to ascend the vertical shaft to her hiding place. She, Tisar, and Lobaka dropped easily through the shaft, and for the first time, in the load lifter's powerful lights, Jaina saw the piles of Yuuzhan Vong corpses that choked the tunnel. She turned away and hoped she wouldn't be sick in her vac suit. The MD droid's voice came through the headset of Jaina's vac suit.
"I would like to examine you and your companions."
"We're all right," Jaina answered. "If I don't throw up. I have a wounded pilot whom you should see first. Walk back the way you came, and take the first left facing out. Keep hailing on these frequencies, and they should answer."
"Very well."
"Take one of the load lifters with you. They'll need supplies as well. And there's a body that will have to be taken out."
"Maybe thousands of bodies."
The MD droid turned to go. Then Jaina was surprised to see the droid's head fly off and strike the mineshaft wall. Sabung-la passed out seconds after the tunnel was depressurized, and had survived only because his aides fought off the other Yuuzhan Vong, who would have trampled him, just long enough for one of them to deploy the Nulith that fed him air, and the Ooglith cloaker that masked him against vacuum and cold. When the War Master woke, with the Nulith's tube down his throat, he was buried under an insulating pile of Yuuzhan Vong dead, mostly his own subalterns. At first, despair consumed him, the knowledge that he had failed utterly, that his fleet had been broken and forced to flee, and even his personal revenge against the Jedi twins had come to nothing. He considered tearing the Nulith from his face and dying along with the brave warriors he had led to destruction. But then he recalled that Jaina and her comrades were near. If they had moved while he was unconscious, then his revenge would still be thwarted. But there had been no reason for them to move. Jaina was still probably at the head of the vertical shaft just overhead. Animated by sudden hope, he clutched his baton of rank and worked his way to the top of the pile of corpses, where he gathered a stock of weapons. His baton and the amphistaffs were all dead, but had frozen into useful positions. Thud and razor bugs were no more than rocks. But the Blorash jelly was in suspended animation, and would live long enough when triggered to do what he intended. When Sabongla had prepared his arsenal, he returned to the corpses, draping enough arms and legs over himself to remain inconspicuous. It was a pity that it wouldn't be Jason Solo he confronted at the end. But he comforted himself with the thought that to kill Jaina would be to hurt Jason, to give him a lifelong sorrow that might be more damaging than if Jason himself were killed. Cold triumph sang through his nerves as he began to detect the powerful lights of the load lifters approaching down the tunnel. He narrowed his eyes, keeping his focus on the vertical shaft, just a few meters over his head. Soon he would strike and take his vengeance. Jaina twisted as she drew her lightsaber, intending to spin away from any attacker, but her feet had somehow gotten stuck to the mineshaft floor, and instead of spinning she sprawled to one side. Luckily, because at that moment Savonla hurled his baton of rank like a spear. The baton missed Jaina entirely and impaled Lobaka, piercing him clean through the shoulder. The Wookiee roared and wobbled. Like Jaina, Blorash Jelly had pinned him to the floor. And he fell into Tisar, who was in the act of drawing his blaster. Little jets of air began to spurt from Lobaka's wounds, crystallizing immediately in the vacuum, and drifting to the floor as glittering snow. Half-deafened by the Wookiee roar she heard over her headset, Jaina hauled herself upright, aided by muscle and low gravity, her lightsaber glowing a soft violet off the cavern walls. Sabongla seized an amphistaff from the weapons he'd strewn nearby and slashed the weapon at Jaina's head. Jaina was frozen to the floor by Blorash Jelly, and Sabongla was behind her. Her helmet cut off her peripheral vision, and the only way she knew she was being attacked was that she saw Sabongla's madly dancing shadow cast by the powerful lights of the loadlifters. She dropped the point of her lightsaber behind her back to guard against Sabongla's swing, and the impact almost wrenched her arm out of its socket. Her heart thundered in her ears. She twisted as far to her right as possible in order to see her attacker, and managed to parry the next furious series of strikes. Sabongla shifted to her left, and Jaina twisted toward him and swung her lightsaber in a sweeping parry from high to low to catch any possible strike. Again, the impact was massive, and nearly tore the weapon from her grasp. The warrior kept chopping at her, the amphistaff held in both hands, and she parried furiously. She had no chance to counterattack, and the impacts were numbing her arm. If something didn't happen soon, her weapon would be knocked from her hand. The fight in the vacuum was in utter silence. Jaina could hear only her own rasping breath and the throbbing of her heart, and then the silence was broken over the comm by Lobaka's bellow as Tisar yanked the baton out of his shoulder. "It's Sabongla." Jaina was startled by Tisar's words coming through her helmet phones. The War Master's face was well known in the New Republic. "Shoot him," Jaina said. She didn't much care who he was. She only wanted him dead and her friends safe. Tisar obliged by firing at the War Master, the brilliant blaster bolts glancing off the rock walls. But the Yuuzhan Vong danced to Jaina's right again to put Jaina between himself and Tisar's blaster. "This one must patch up Loey,"
Tisar said. He's losing air. You've got to hold off the Vong.
Thanks, Jaina muttered.
She twisted to the right again, turning the movement into a cut. She chopped a chunk out of the frozen amphistaff, and Sabong La stepped out of range to pick up another weapon. When he came on again, he lunged rather than slashed, and Jaina was able to slide her blade into a circular parry and bind. But in her twisted position, she lacked the leverage of wrist and arm to force the disarm that followed the bind. Instead, her blade grated on the amphistaff and locked. Only a meter away, she could see Sabong La's silent snarl of triumph. He kicked and drove his heel into Jaina's thigh. An overwhelming jolt of pain shot through her thigh and knee. With a cry, she lost her grip on her lightsaber and pitched forward. In front of her, Lobaka crouched before Tisar, both nailed to the ground by Blorash jelly. Loi's hand pressed on his shoulder, trying to hold in his air, while Tisar worked frantically to apply a patch to the wound on the Wookiee's back. Jaina snatched Loi's lightsaber from his belt and triggered it as she pulled herself to her feet. Sabong La had cleared Jaina's lightsaber from his weapon and lunged forward again, and his eyes widened in surprise as Jaina slashed two clawed toes from the rod-ank leg he had implanted as an arm. The War Master stepped back as dark blood oozed from the wound and fell with a graceful lack of haste to the floor. Jaina kept the lightsaber on guard, pointed at his face. He glared at her, red murder glowing in his eyes.
"How's Streak?" she asked.
"He's passed out. This one has patched the exit wound, but the wound at the front is still venting."
Jaina watched Sabong La take a grip on his weapon and dig his feet into the ground.
"Hurry," she said. "I think I just made him mad."
Sabong La charged the amphistaff a blur. He attacked to Jaina's right, drawing her lightsaber out of line, then shifted to a vicious overhead cut coming in from the left. Jaina managed to block in time, but the impact bent her far over, the air going from her lungs in a whoof. Her head low, she could see the soft violet radiance of her own lightsaber lying on the floor past the War Master's legs. She sliced madly at the amphistaff as she straightened again, engaging the furious warrior in a long series of attacks and parries. And then Jaina reached out with the force, picked up her lightsaber from the ground behind Sabong La, and drove the violet blade point first through his throat. The War Master fell. Jaina didn't spare him another glance, but turned to Tisar and Lobaka. Tisar was just finishing the patch on the front of Loi's vac suit. She could see the suit begin to reinflate, the Wookiee's muzzle snarling open as he drew in a breath. Tisar looked up at her.
"The suit is patched, but the shoulder is not."
"Force-meld," Jaina gasped. "Tell Uncle Luke we need another MD droid, and blood to replace what Loi's lost."
"That is wise."
Tisar straightened, then looked down at his feet. He tried to move one foot, and the Blorash jelly shattered like fine glass. Apparently, it didn't deal with vacuum well.
"Now we can move," Jaina said. "Great timing, as usual."